City Club is a nonpartisan entity that hosts discussions about public policy and the challenges and triumphs we encounter in our great city. We share our platform with a wide range of speakers on a wide range of topics. Our discussion of any specific topic is not an endorsement of a particular view by the club. We listen to feedback and welcome the possibility that a panel we host inspires future events or forums that provide opportunities for alternative views and a deeper understanding of complex issues. We welcome a few returning speakers today. Mr. Brian Johnson has served as CEO of Equality Illinois. His efforts lead to build a better Illinois by advancing equal treatment and full acceptance of the LGBT plus community. Brian is an active City Club member, and we appreciate the continued collaboration. Reyna Ortiz is the program... Reyna is the program director with Task Force Prevention and Community Service, which was founded in 1990. Task Force is in the heart of the Austin community and is committed to improving the health and well-being of the LGBTQ plus and youth of color. Reyna is the chair of the Sex Worker Advisory Group and a board member of Equality Illinois. Brian and Reyna will take questions following their presentation. If you have questions, again, please make sure that you fill them out in the form, and our folks will pick them up. Illinois State Senator Selena Villanueva will be moderating today's Q&A. Senator Villanueva represents the 12th District. At this time, I'm going to ask those who are coming up to come on up to the stage. We'll have presentations, we'll have the Q&A, and then we'll be back to close the program. Thanks.
Thank you for that introduction. Brian and I are so grateful to be here with you all today. I want to first acknowledge that we are gathered today on unceded lands of Native peoples, including the Miami, the Ho-Chunk, the Fox, and the Council of the Three Fires, the Ojibwe, the Ottawa, and the Potawatomi peoples. May our words and actions today honor their legacy.
And I also want to add my thanks to the entire City Club team, Jackie, Dan, Amanda, everybody. What you have done and are doing to create a common public forum for our city to discuss the biggest and most salient issues of the day is incredibly important to the fabric of our community. And I know in the future you plan to bring in speakers on adjacent issues who may disagree with what we share today, and we welcome that. We are grateful to get to participate in a robust and hearty conversation over the upcoming months. And finally, I want to thank the workers at Maggiano's for their service and making it possible for us to come together today. We are here to talk about sex work. Now, I want to acknowledge that this is a topic many people have preconceived notions about, and some in this room may even be uncomfortable talking about this, and that's okay. We honor that. We look forward to sharing with you all a bit about the journey we have been on. To lay the foundation, let me clarify that throughout the conversation today, we will be using the term sex work. So let me explain what we mean by that phrase. When we say sex work, we mean adult, consensual sex work. We do not mean trafficking or coercion or sex with people who can't consent. That is not sex work. For today, we are only talking about a transaction between two consenting adults to engage in sex. And today is just an initial conversation. We hope you leave today more knowledgeable about how the criminalization of sex work leads to real harm and violence. And we hope you leave reflecting on how you may join our collective journey to keep sex workers safe.
Thank you, Brian. I want to tell you a little about my journey from sex work to social work. For over 20 years, I worked as a sex worker. I originally got into sex work as a young woman for many reasons. First, I wanted to take ownership of my own sexuality. For too long, I saw how people, men, wanted to control my body, but I wanted to be clear that I was the one who got to determine who I had sex with and for what. Second, as a young trans woman who was not always welcome into traditional working spaces, sex work was a way for me to earn stable money. Finally, as a young trans woman who had the unique expenses related to my own transition, sex work was a way for me to afford my transition. In short, sex work gave me the power, the money, and the stability that I wanted. To be clear, I was not coerced into sex work. I was not a victim. As a sex worker, I wanted to control my own body. But that didn't mean that I wasn't safe and I wasn't afraid. Many times I was terrified. I was afraid of a prospective client might turn out to be a police officer who would harass and arrest me. I was afraid a client might turn violent. And because of sex work existed on the outside of the protections of the law and traditional economy, I had to navigate that fear mostly on my own. My sisters, my network, and other champions supported. Over the years, I have worked with many young sex workers, most trans sex workers, and my story is not unique. The young women I work with want to be in control over their own bodies and want to be safe. But in this current laws around sex work threaten their agency and their safety.
And I came to this journey 4 years ago. Raina, as a board member of Equality Illinois, took me out to lunch and told me her story. She told me how many of the women she supported were afraid and living with criminal records simply for having engaged in consensual sex. She asked that we at Equality Illinois look into this. So we began, like we do with every new issue, by listening. For over a year, we conducted deep interviews with sex workers. We gathered sex workers to tell us their stories, why they got into sex work, what they were hopeful for, what they were afraid of. We commissioned a legal memo from a nationally respected law firm to give us the lay of the land of the laws around sex work. We reviewed all the research we could get our hands on. We even commissioned the most robust poll of Illinois voters and maybe even voters anywhere on their views on sex work. What you will see today is a result of years of listening and learning. And here is the bottom line. What we have learned is that no matter what any one person's views on sex work are, most people believe sex workers deserve to be safe. And yet, sex workers live under the near constant threat of violence. 75% of all sex workers will experience sexual violence in their careers. And nearly two-thirds of all trans people killed in the past decade were sex workers. And these figures are not just abstractions. They reflect the pain experienced by real people here in Illinois. On March 5th, 2019, Chicago Police Department Sergeant James Sadak was driving a marked squad car and wearing his white shirt uniform when he approached a woman in North Lawndale. He activated his sirens and insisted that she get into the squad car. He told her, "You can get in the front or you can get in the back." And once the woman was in the car, Sadak drove to an abandoned, secluded lot. He locked the car doors, closed his laptop, and turned off his police radio, and he sexually assaulted her. And why did he think he could assault a woman so brazenly in a police car while wearing his uniform? simply because she was a sex worker and he thought he could get away with it. And this is just one story. But we know that so many of these stories don't make it to the courtrooms or to the pages of the Sun-Times or the Tribune. And no one deserves to work under the umbrella of this much violence.
So why is sex work so violent? Why do sex workers face so much risk of harm? In short, it is the criminalization of sex work that makes it so dangerous. In this case, because four primary factors. One, when sex work is criminalized, sex workers can't vet their clients. When I was a sex worker, there was times I wanted to research a client before I met with them. I would have loved to have Googled them to see if they were a cop or might harass me, or even if they had a criminal record of violence. But because clients know sex work is illegal, I know they were unlikely to give me their names or any real identifying information so I can do even the basic vetting. Clients were worried that they might be arrested or caught up in a sting, so they were guarded. They guarded their identities and their secrecy, so I couldn't protect myself by doing even the most basic vetting. Two. When sex work is criminalized, sex workers can't always meet the clients in the spaces of their own choosing. There were times I would love to have met a client in my home or home of someone that I trusted, but as I mentioned, clients were so afraid of being arrested or targeted by the police that they were often reluctant to come to a place of my choosing out of fear that would be caught by the police. This is why the criminalization of sex work often forces sex workers into the streets or to neighborhoods. Three, when sex work is criminalized, sex workers are reluctant to go to police for protection and support. Sex workers know we are participating in a transaction that would get us arrested at any time. That means when sex workers face assault or see someone being assaulted, or even see someone that they think is facing the violence of trafficking, they are unlikely to go to police for fear of being arrested ourselves. And the data shows that how laws criminalizing sex work target sex workers far more than the clients. In fact, the criminalization of sex work disproportionately targets women, and particularly women of color. According to the FBI, of all arrests nationwide for prostitution in 2019, 61% of these arrests were women. And 42% of these arrests identified as Black, while an additional 19% identified as Latinx. Looking at this arrest data for prostitution, you would think that white men are not involved in sex work, which I can tell you from my own personal experience is far from the truth. And this data only hints at the thousands of stories of sex workers who won't seek police support because of ever-present danger of being targeted. Mike, can you play the video from last week's Tonight with John Oliver where a sex worker talks about their experience going to the police after being assaulted by a client?
Years ago, I reported a rape from a client I was supposed to be working with, and I just wound up getting arrested. I spent a long time in jail for trying to report a rape, and you just learn better. Like, no way I'll deal with the cops. I'll get raped 100 times before I do.
Their story, as heartbreaking as it is simply not unique. Finally, when sex work is criminalized, taxpayer dollars are being used to target adults engaged in consensual sex. They are not being used to go after the people we all want the police and prosecutors to go after, the assailants and the traffickers. I would like Mike to play one more video clip, this time from the testimony of Andrew Lewis from the Greater New Orleans Human Trafficking Task Force when he spoke before a committee at the Louisiana House of Representatives.
Just listen to Andrew Lewis, the former coordinator for the Greater New Orleans Human Trafficking Task Force, tell the Louisiana House of Representatives about one sting operation that he personally witnessed.
What I saw was a standard operation, and it was deeply troubling. Agents pretending to be clients set up dates with sex workers. When a sex worker arrived to the hotel room, they would be arrested and forced into another cold room, often with very little clothing, and interviewed. The same agent that handcuffed them would then ask them if they had been trafficked. And no matter their response, they were arrested and booked. At the end of the night, those arrests were reported back to me as prospective victims of human trafficking, even when there was no evidence of force, fraud, or coercion. Let me be clear. Human trafficking does occur, and likely more than we know. But because we are spending a majority of our time and money on criminalizing consensual adult sex work, we're not able to help those being actually forced to work in the construction, agriculture, and yes, sex work industries in Louisiana.
While Andrew's story took place in New Orleans, many sex workers I know of in Illinois live in fear of the similar fate for them at the hands of police in our own state. When you put this all together, it is the criminalization of sex work itself creates the conditions of violence against sex workers. Before I turn it over to Brian, I want to make one final point. You may be wondering, why now? Why are we talking about keeping sex workers safe today? In addition to wanting to protect sex workers from harm right away, we are currently living in a time where too many powerful forces are trying to take away people's bodily autonomy. We saw this with the Dobbs decision ending the rights to abortions. We see this in the rest. We see this in the time of criminalizing gender-affirming care. See this with anti-LGBTQ legislation, sweeping state legislations across the country. We at Equality Illinois believe that we can't truly be free when our adult consensual sexual relationships are criminalized, when the government tries to play big brother over what we do with our own bodies, right?
So because of Raina, we've heard about the violence and the fear of violence too many sex workers face. But I want you all to imagine a world with me where sex workers are safe, where thousands of sex workers are not assaulted every year, where trans people are not murdered at the horrifying rates they are being murdered across our country today. Right? What if we had a world where sex work was not criminalized, and sex workers could benefit from the protections of the police and the legal economy? Yeah. Well, one, when sex work is decriminalized, sex workers are more likely able to vet their clients. Because clients would know they are not at risk for arrests or police stings, they are more likely to share identifying information with sex workers who could conduct more basic research on clients' backgrounds to confirm that they do not have a track record of assault or harm. Two, when sex work is decriminalized, sex workers are more likely to meet clients off the streets and in places of their own choosing. Again, because clients would know they are not at risk of being set up by police, they are more likely to be willing to trust a sex worker when the sex worker wants to establish the location of their encounter. Three, when sex work is decriminalized, sex workers are more likely to go to the police when they need help. Right? When they are assaulted or when they see a fellow sex worker being assaulted, they can seek police support to go after the assailant and stop this violence. When they see someone who they believe may be a victim of trafficking, they can go to the police to help crack down more readily on coercive traffickers. And finally, when sex work is decriminalized, we can use taxpayer dollars more directly to go after the most violent offenders and human traffickers, not to be used to target those engaged in adult consensual sex. We can avoid the stings that Andrew Lewis described in New Orleans and instead focus on the assailants who need to be stopped. So the result of a world in which sex work is decriminalized is that sex workers are safer, pure and simple.
Thank you, Brian. But increased safety for sex workers isn't the only benefit for decriminalizing sex work. Many studies affirm that public health is also improved when sex work is decriminalized. According to a 2014 analysis published by The Lancet, decriminalization of sex work could cut HIV transmission rates up to 46% across the world in the decade after that report. And a white paper in a review of economy studies found that decriminalization has led to the decrease of STIs rates for those like gonorrhea by 39%. Decriminalization is also essential for bringing about full economic justice for sex workers. An ACLU review of available research suggests that full decriminalization of sex work might allow all sex workers to access more stable legal income and autonomy.
I want to take a brief moment to talk about something that sometimes gets falsely lumped in with adult consensual sex work, and that is human trafficking. Let me say clearly that human trafficking is a unique horror that needs to be stopped.
Yeah.
As we have been on this journey, I have heard stories about trafficking survivors that turn my stomach and break my heart. Stories of trafficked people being violently assaulted for months and sometimes years, of people being cut off from any support network, of people's bodies and labor being stolen from them by violent and cruel tyrants, of survivors living in abject fear day after day. We all must work to make sure that not a single person ever gets trafficked. No one should suffer such a violent assault on their safety or their dignity, ever.
But simply put, adult consensual sex work and human trafficking are two entirely separate issues. Sex work is fundamentally about consent between adults. Trafficking is about coercion, violence, fraud, and the utter lack of consent. I'll remind you what I shared with you at the beginning. I was a sex worker. I was not trafficked.
And when we understand how trafficking is different from sex work, we do so when we understand more about trafficking. Right? According to the United Nations, the majority of those trafficked are not trafficked for sexual exploitation. 22% of people trafficked are trafficked for labor in fishing and farming. Yet we don't seek to criminalize agriculture as a way to stop trafficking. Right? 8% of people are trafficked for domestic work or in hospitality, yet we don't believe we have to outlaw domestic work to catch traffickers. 6% of people are trafficked in construction, yet we don't insist on making construction work a crime to prevent people from being trafficked. We understand that adults can consensually engage in farming and domestic work and construction without being trafficked. The same is true for sex work. And early data suggests the decriminalization of sex work could be a helpful tool to combat trafficking. When sex workers can partner with police to go after traffickers and protect people they believe may be trafficked without fear of arrest themselves, we believe they are more likely to aid in the stopping of trafficking. And in fact, this has played out in places like New South Wales and Australia, where they saw a marked drop in trafficking victims following their passage of their own laws decriminalizing sex work. Right? The same thing was true in New Zealand, where their Ministry of Justice saw that the decriminalization of sex work helped dramatically reduce trafficking because sex workers could partner with police free of the fear of harassment and arrest. And in fact, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Trafficking in Persons issued a report to the entire United Nations General Assembly in 2020 calling for the decriminalization of all sexual services as a vital tool to reduce trafficking. So this is why some prominent trafficking survivor groups, such as the National Survivor Network, favor the full decriminalization of adult consensual sex work as a critical tool to help stop trafficking.
Now, sometimes you will hear people propose watered-down proposals about decriminalization. But too often, these proposals are a lot of work to pass and produce greater safety, no greater safety for sex workers. Sometimes people propose something called partial decrim, where the sale of sex work is decriminalized, but the purchase of sex work, the client side, remains illegal. The United Nations Working Group on the Decriminalization Against Women and Girls released a report in September 2023 where it found that partial decriminalization of sex work increases the surveillance and harassment of sex workers by the police, leading to an increase in arrest and detention and further stigmatization and decriminalization. But if you think about what we just talked about, partial decrim doesn't keep sex workers safe. In a world where clients can still be arrested, they are unlikely to share their identifying information, meaning sex workers still can't vet them. They are unlikely to be willing to meet at a place of the sex worker's choosing for fear of being targeted by the police. When sex workers tell us it is what would still be unlikely to seek police help if they know part of the transaction is illegal. We learned from the FBI statistics and from Andrew Lewis' story how police too often use laws to target sex workers more than their clients. The sex workers we work with know this and admit that they will be unlikely to seek out police support for fear of being mistreated as one half of a partially illegal transaction. Finally, we would still have police and prosecutor resources funded by Illinois taxpayers going after adults engaged in consensual, non-harmful sex. In short, it would take a lot of political effort to pass a partial decrim bill, but sex workers would likely be no more safer because of it.
Also, some people propose the legalization of sex work, and this term legalization is shorthand for the creation of a new regulatory structure around sex work. Now, the sex workers we speak with are very worried about the imposition of a punitive, unnecessarily burdensome, and inequitably applied regulatory framework. They do not want to trade in the risk of being arrested for prostitution for the risk of being arrested for failing to pay onerous fines or file burdensome paperwork. At Equality Illinois, our concerns about adopting a complex array of regulations around sex work are threefold. One, we believe that opponents could try to use regulations to make sex work so burdensome it continues to operate unsafely in the shadows. Two, we don't want a world where regulations are so complex that only the rich and powerful people are able to navigate them, thereby allowing those who already have wealth and power the ability to accumulate wealth at the expense of sex workers. And three, we have seen from the FBI data that laws that govern sex work are disproportionately used to target black and brown women. We believe an onerous regulatory regime, even one which on its face is race and gender neutral, could be used to do the same. The sex workers we work with want sex work to be treated like any other transaction between two adults, with no more and no less regulation. They are not asking that sex work be treated like a special case. Instead, they want sex work to be treated similar to how transactions like hiring a house cleaner or paying for an artist's work on Etsy to be treated, covered by the same laws governing fraud, subject to the same taxation requirements, but not subject to new and burdensome regulations. So we believe that any regulations that are adopted should be minimal and only those absolutely necessary to keep sex workers and their clients safe. Anything more could continue to threaten the lives of sex workers. And I want to share with you a bit about the growing movement in support of decrim. It is important to highlight how many organizations are on board with the decriminalization of sex work. In Illinois, groups like Planned Parenthood, we have Equality Illinois, the Chicago Abortion Fund, the National Immigrant Justice Center have signed on in support of decriminalization. Nationally, groups like HRC, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, the Transgender Legal Defense and Education Fund, and others have publicly come out in support of decriminalization efforts. And internationally, a movement is afoot to fully decriminalize sex work. Like we've mentioned, countries like New Zealand and Belgium have recently decriminalized sex work, while multiple jurisdictions in Australia have fallen suit. But I think perhaps most powerfully, in September of 2023, just a few months ago, the UN Working Group on Discrimination Against Women and Girls called for the full decriminalization of sex work globally as a human rights issue, necessary to keep sex workers safe and free from stigmatization and harm. And we also know that a majority of Illinois voters, when told that the decriminalization of sex work keeps sex workers safe, want to decriminalize sex work. We commissioned a poll of voters by that nationally respected GBAO Strategies, and they found, when educated on the issue, more key voters in Illinois support the decriminalization of sex work than support keeping sex work illegal, including Democrats by an 18-point margin, Black voters by a 1-point margin, Latinx voters by a 3-point margin, and moderate suburban voters by a 4-point margin. Voters want to keep sex workers safe. And when they know that the decriminalization of sex work does so, they support it.
Yeah. I hope you have learned a lot from what we shared with you today. I know we talked a lot, so let me wrap up by summarizing the four most important things to hope you take away from this conversation. One, this is a diverse audience. And so I know that that means there will be a lot of differing opinions on sex work here. While eventually I hope we can change our hearts and minds so we can eliminate the stigma of sex work, that is not our goal today. Oh, wait, it is. That is our goal. I hope we can change our hearts and minds so we can eliminate the stigma of sex work. No, I said it right. Thank you all. Our hope is that no matter how you feel about sex work, you share our belief that no sex worker should be assaulted or killed simply for engaging in adult consensual sex. Two, there is no way that we can help create a world in which sex workers are safe from harm unless we fully decriminalize sex work. By giving sex workers the tools to better protect themselves, we can make sex workers safer. Three, this is why groups ranging from the United Nations to HRC to Equality Illinois and many local groups are in all favor of full decriminalization of sex work. Four, when Illinois voters learn that decriminalization of sex work keeps sex workers safe, they support it.
And I want to end on a personal note. In the course of this effort, I have met and worked with dozens of sex workers. And I want to do everything I can to make sure that our laws keep the men and women I've gotten to know safe. When I think back to that night on March 5th in North Lawndale in 2019, how a person in power thought he could victimize and assault a woman simply because she was a sex worker, my heart aches. Nothing like that should happen to anyone ever again. Clearly stating that sex work is not a crime will send a strong signal that sex workers and their consensual partners are worthy of being safe. But I am also keenly aware of how my own safety is tied up with the safety of sex workers. We all belong together. As long as we criminalize adult consensual sex work anywhere, I am not safe. Because when the state uses its power to intimidate adults engaged in consensual sex, queer people know we can never be fully equal. And this is not hypothetical. Even today, people like the Attorney General in Texas are publicly seeking to recriminalize homosexuality. I can't be safe, my family can't be safe, when the state is allowed to arrest and incarcerate adults for engaging in consensual sex. Today it may be sex work, but tomorrow it could be my husband and me. In 1961, Illinois was the first state in the country to fully decriminalize homosexuality. I want today's lawmakers to be as brave and forward-thinking as their predecessors were 60 years ago. Illinois has a proud tradition of being on the front lines of justice and equity, and I hope we continue to earn that reputation.
Thank you, Brian. For 20 years, I was a sex worker. And I'm going to say that again because it's the truth. For 20 years, I was a sex worker. And for 20 years, I lived with fear. It wasn't always an intense fear, but there was always some type of fear. Fear that I could be attacked. Fear that I could be arrested. Fear that I can lose my job or my home. Even when I wanted to transition out of sex work, I was afraid. Afraid of having been a sex worker would prevent me from the type of future that I wanted. No one should have to live with that fear. I am no longer a sex worker. I am now a social worker. Thank you. Every day I work with young people, mostly young black and brown trans girls, and I see that they are afraid. I promised myself that I would do whatever it takes to make sure that these girls don't live with that fear. That is why I'm here with you today. I want you to join us in keeping the girls that I work with safe. Safe when they are engaging in sex work and safe when they decide to transition out of sex work. These young girls are beautiful, funny, kind, amazing, and they deserve to be safe. Thank you.
I'd like to invite Senator Selena Villanueva to the stage to moderate some Q&A.
Good afternoon, everyone. All right, as you were told before, you have pieces of paper on your table. So if you do have questions, feel free to write them down, and I know someone's going to be walking around to pick them up. But in the meantime, I'm very, very proud and honored to be here. I heard Reina speak at Mex Talks last year, where I was like, oh my God, who is this amazing person? Because I love her ability to be able to engage with the community, and I was like, yes. And being able to work with Brian and the Equality Illinois team has been such an honor and pleasure. And having been an organizer on marriage equality way back when, working in the Equality Illinois offices, it always feels like home when I'm with you all. All right, we're going to get to our questions. I will open it up to both of you all, Reina and Brian. I'm going to go with our first one. Please share your lens and ideas on how to create safe workspaces for trans people to prevent sex work from being a leading source of income.
That's a good question. So one, just in general, if people are choosing to engage in sex work, we still want them to be safe regardless. But when we think about transitioning out of sex work and working into like traditional working spaces, there's this really something really simple that just pops into my mind, and it really is just when is kindness. You know, if a trans person in general, you know, when you think about your working space, how many open and proud trans women are in your working spaces? And if they're not, why not? What are we not doing as a society or as agencies or as companies that are not open and inviting to trans people to have them in your spaces, you know? But once they're there, you know, we just really just want to work and pay our bills just like everybody else, you know? But just in general, you know, everyone deserves a degree of just kindness. Yeah.
You want to go ahead, Brian?
I think that was good.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I love that because I think one of the biggest things that my therapist taught me at a very early age, and I'm a very big firm believer in therapy, was we need to have compassion. Mm. We need to have compassion for ourselves, but we also need to have compassion for others. Right. Mm. And I think too often that gets lost because we very selfishly think about ourselves most of the time. But moving on to my next question, and this is one from the crowd. And I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say names, but we'll... You can't? You give me permission? All right. So this is from Bonnie Kim. Can you discuss the benefits of decriminalizing sex work to the state at large? And why would the average Illinoisan care about this issue or should care about this issue?
Yeah. I mean, I think the benefits really... are mostly related to safety. There are additional ones. Again, we mentioned the statistics on public health. I want to be clear. Those statistics about HIV transmission rates and STI rates going down were not rates within the community of sex workers. It was within the population at large. So I think that's it. I also think more people being able to engage in stable, safe income, paying taxes on that income, is going to be a huge benefit to the state. In terms of why people would focus on this and care about it, you know, it's interesting. When we did that polling, we didn't just do a poll. We did multiple focus groups with lots of communities across the state. And honestly, what we found, and this just speaks to the heart of Illinoisans, is Illinoisans want people to be safe, right? They want to live in a society where no matter who you are, no matter what your identity is, no matter what your work is, that you are safe. And that is the message that resonates with us and also moves the most voters.
Wonderful. This is a good question that we just got from the crowd. I don't want to mess up your name, but these are two questions. One is, for individuals who want to get involved with your work, how can we do so? And the second question is, please share your opinion on Rhode Island's recent special committee study that recommended decrim. Should Illinois' government conduct a similar study with legal sex worker rights organizations and public health officials, et cetera?
Yeah. One thing? How you can get involved, go to equalityillinois.org. We have an entire website there. You could sign up for action alerts and information. Last summer alone, we had over 2,000 Illinoisans across the state sign up. And we're not talking about just Chicago. Literally in festivals across the state, sign up to learn more and get engaged. So that is a great way to do that. I have not read the particularities of the Rhode Island study, but what I will say is, as someone who did not know a lot about sex work until Raina, one could say asked, one could say pushed with love, that I look into this, is I think the more people learn about this issue from actual people engaged in adult consensual sex work, the better solution we're going to get to. So.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like every time I hear you guys speak about this issue that, like, I just learn more and more and more, and I'm a constant student, so I love it. I think something else that's also really important is, you know, we talked about law enforcement and obviously, you know, kind of the power dynamic within both of your remarks. Another question is, how will law enforcement determine if a sex worker is being coerced as defined by, you know, I guess, legally as what the work that's going to entail, and if their activity cannot be explored because it is legal? Like, or exploited, I'm assuming that's what that...
So I think the best way, because we get versions of that question a lot, the best way to go about that is let's think about the legal industries where there may be complaints about somebody being trafficked, whether it's a farm or a construction site or even a retail venue. So when we talk to experts and we say, okay, what happens if somebody at a farm is thought to be trafficked? Well, the best practice currently in place is that law enforcement would involve other agencies collectively. They would conduct an investigation, a broad investigation, including with interviews of the suspected victim as well as others, and they would make a determination. right? Law enforcement already knows how to do this in other industries. We don't actually have to outlaw the entire underlying industry to give law enforcement the tools that they need to conduct an investigation.
Gina, you want to add to that? Okay, cool. Maybe you both can take a crack at this because I like this question that Eileen shared with us. Illinois loves its regulations. We love regulating everything. If we could regulate pasta, we would. And I love me some pasta. But we love, you know, Illinois loves its regulations, unions, and layers of bureaucracy. God knows that I love them too. How do you overcome this in Illinois and obviously in regards to sex work?
I hate bureaucracy. Okay.
So I think there are two things. One is I think we need to give a shout out to Illinois for the level of protections that already exist for workers, thank you, labor, and for consumers. We are not in the wild, wild west where transactions are just totally unprotected. We have a robust framework, fraud protections, taxation, a host of protections, right? Those already exist. So the floor in Illinois is already high. I think the second thing is, I think we have to understand that any regulation that is onerous or burdensome, that is unrelated to keeping people safe, runs the risk of increasing harm. So we have to think about it through that lens of trade-offs, right? If we end up having a binder that is this thick about regulations for sex work, it is not going to achieve the outcome we all want, which is bringing sex work out of the shadows so that people can be safe. So I would say thinking about it through that lens of trade-offs, which is why, Senator, we say it is not that we are opposed to regulations. I want to be clear. We at Equality Illinois are not opposed to regulations, but we only want those regulations that are absolutely essential to keep clients and sex workers safe and no more.
I want to be clear, I am very pro-union. I am a former union member. So when I talk about the headaches of bureaucracy, I'm talking more so as a legislator because I get to see it from the inside. So I would just like to put that out there. In case anybody really ever thinks that I am anti-union, because that's not a real thing. But I think this is a good question. This next question is, how can we frame sex work as a form of entrepreneurship and development programming that empowers sex workers by emphasizing business skills and professional development?
Yeah, that's a good one. I could take that one. I don't think people understand, you know, as a sex worker, you know, we had quotas, booked appointments, we managed our money, we had, you know, it was like running our own business, you know, and a lot of my tools that I learned as a sex worker helped me become director of programs of an LGBT organization on the west side of Chicago, you know. So when I meet trans women, we have a bunch of employment programs that we want trans women that are sex workers or anyone that's a sex worker, you know, come in. We have employment programs. You want to teach them, but also build off the skills that they've acquired when they were engaging in sex work. You know, I don't think people really understand until you do. It really is like running a business. And there's a lot of tools and lessons to be learned to help you in the process of like entrepreneurship.
And leadership development.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is. Well, I want to thank you all for allowing me to moderate this conversation, and thank you all for allowing me to speak a little.
Yeah. Thank you, Senator. And a huge, I know before Jackie comes out, a huge thank you once again to the City Club. When we wanted to have this conversation, we knew there was no better forum for public, transparent, robust debate than the City Club. And as you all go into a series of conversations on this issue and adjacent issues, we are so grateful that we got to have this conversation here. So thank you.
Brian has become famous for having lots of firsts at City Club, and we appreciate that so much. This is the place where we hold the conversation, and we like to keep conversations going. This is Chicago.
That's right.
And if you look to your left and look to your right, you'll see someone that probably doesn't have something in common with you, and that is what Chicago is. So, great discussion. Looking forward to what's next. If Dan were here, you guys can probably quote it with me. He would say, there's more to come. So, in his absence, I will say there's more to come. Thank you all so much. Please continue to keep having conversations at your kitchen tables, at your dinner tables, at the water cooler. Keep talking. Keep talking so much. Please look at the upcoming list of programs that we have coming. Our staff, whom I'm incredibly fond of, is doing such a great... Yeah. They are amazing. They're doing such a great job. Keep making sure that you keep a look at, if you're not a member, you can still look, but make sure that you check out what programs are coming up. They do fill up fast, mm-hmm. and we do want you to have a good seat. You remember, I can't get a call anymore and say, can you get me in? I can't do that anymore. So please make sure that you keep a lookout for all of the good programming that we have coming up. There's so much fun stuff happening. So not to belabor the time any longer, enjoy the rest of your afternoon, and we are adjourned.
Thank you.